Today on the Syneos Health Podcast, we'll be talking about the current and future role of communications in pharmaceutical marketing. I'm Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting, and I'm joined by Amy Hutnick. Amy has been working in the industry in communications for many years and is an expert on how communications rolls out and where it's going in the industry. We recorded at a leadership conference, so you'll hear a bit of background noise. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. The future of communications and pharmaceuticals next on the Syneos Health Podcast. What is your role now? I knew beforehand what you were getting, but I forgot what it exactly is.
That is okay. I am the Chief Growth and Transformation Officer for our communications division. So that's kind of a funny title. Not a lot of people have that, so it needs some explanation. But I work to help our agencies across public relations, medical communications, advertising to both work together and discreetly to drive new business growth, to drive delight with our current clients, and to work together and across our Syneos Health Network to deliver new solutions.
So I know there are a lot of ad agencies at Syneos Health, but people wouldn't have heard of Syneos Health Communications necessarily, but they know the ad agencies.
Right, not necessarily, but they often know us by our team brand name. So in advertising, we have GSW, we have Navicor, we have Addison Whitney, which is our naming and branding agency. And then in medical communications, we have Cadent in the United States, we have Litmus in Europe. And in public relations, we have Chandler Chico, we have Biosector 2, we have Chamberlain, and we have Alidora.
And one more, Syneos Managed Markets Communications Agency team, which I've worked with before.
So a lot those of brand names, yeah.
Yeah, and you kind of sit above all of them. That's really interesting.
Or in the middle. I say in the middle of all of them to work with all those teams. Yep.
You've been working off, obviously, in communications also for a long time. We've worked together for years.
We have.
I'm not afraid to say on this podcast, Amy Hutnick is one of my very favorite people. I'm so glad to be getting finally in the booth with Amy Hutnick.
That is so lovely. Thank you.
So you communicate well, and you have been around communications for a long time. Have you seen it change really dramatically, or is it just an evolution, and where do you see the world going?
Probably a little of both. I think that it has changed dramatically in the shape of the channels, the choices that are available to us as strategists who think about what engagement is going to look like with audiences. That's changed dramatically, obviously, just even in the past 5 and 10 years, right? The choices we have to communicate with, to engage with, are at a maximum. There were years ago when I started my career, I won't tell you how many years ago, where those choices were more limited. They were, you know, print vehicles and radio and broadcast vehicles, right? And today that's far, far different. So you have to be really choiceful and thoughtful, and you have to communicate at a level that feels like an individual level. And so we talk a lot about not necessarily DTC or direct-to-consumer advertising, but DTME. Direct to me. The one-on-one communication is powerful and possible now. And so as marketers, we have to make important choices with our budgets and our messages so that they resonate with our audiences.
So if I were a brand manager in pharma, or heaven forbid, a CEO in pharma, I would find communications to be overwhelming at this point.
Yeah.
Where maybe I understood that I need to make ads for television at one point because I would see them if I turned on Jeopardy. There would be. But if not, maybe I wouldn't see that ad. And I wouldn't know quite as much about what people were seeing. And I had magazines. I had golf magazines.
That's right. You could use that.
I could use that. Now what?
How do you get a handle on it? Well, the good news is as the engagement channels have evolved, so has the data available to us. So when we look out at the landscape of the folks we are hoping to communicate with, to engage with, and influence, the data available to us to tell us what their preferences are, how they are likely to respond and engage, is almost infinite. And so the revolution of data has accompanied that evolution of channels, and that gives us such a wonderful tool set to use to make good choices. So as a brand manager, as you said, or a CEO, looking at audiences and thinking about where to put my best next dollar, that data becomes incredibly powerful. So we look at that in the shape of audience insights, what do we know about our audience and our discrete audiences, channel insights, what do we know about how those channels are going to perform, and then measurement insights, what do we know about what happened when we spoke to them and engaged and how they reacted.
So if we think about different channels, you mean just lots of different places on the internet, or what am I missing? Is there something more to channels?
Yep, but think about social and mobile virtual interactions, think about face-to-face interactions, think about support and advocacy groups, think about conversations with caregivers, with physicians, with payers and payer influencers, advocacy stakeholders. So there's quite a lot of subgroups that influence the whole ecosystem of audiences, and they're not all discrete. You know, you can be a couple of those things and need to have perhaps different messaging in each of those settings, or perhaps consistency in that messaging.
Have you seen the money move away from advertising to physicians in particular to get these other groups that now have maybe more decision-making capabilities than a physician?
I would say maybe not move away, but become more potent. It's more finite and specific in the way that we spend and that we recommend spending, right? So face-to-face conversation and promotion and education is really powerful, but you want to be really smart about the way you segment your physician audience and go and talk to them. So it's not that it goes away, but it's now accompanied by a whole host of other things. You know, physicians are people too. So they also go online and interact with social and mobile channels, and we want to also have the opportunity to engage with them there. So it's just a more choiceful spreading. It's not mass media in the sense of sort of an older model of advertising and communication.
That's interesting. So we may be able to get by with, don't want to say the same budget. I don't know if the old number that we would have when we were doing basically M&A deals was 10% on their sales force of peak year sales. You're going to spend that on marketing every year. 10% you'd spend on your sales force.
Yeah.
And that's how you basically calculated it. Have you seen those percentages basically now either blow up or shrink?
I just think it becomes less hard and fast because they're fluidity to the dynamics of your audience and what they need in any given year and what's happening in the marketplace. And so what you're talking about for maybe a large population-based therapy is totally different than maybe an acute or, you know, a rare disease focus. And so those metrics start to be less applicable. And they're also less applicable because we have, again, so much more data to tell us how to make better choices. So I think we hear every year, I feel like every year, the sales force is going away, right? Personal promotion is dead. It's all about non-personal channels and the internet or whatever. You know,
it's been dead for several years.
It's been dead for several years. It's not dead. I mean, it's not dead for a reason, because people and physicians enjoy and report that they enjoy and benefit from the face-to-face communication, the education that they receive, the fact that it enhances their understanding for practice benefit. And so I think its demise is overtold right now.
Yeah.
And we recognize that. So it's not so much, am I going to not do that anymore? I'm going to do it really choicefully as a complement to so many other things that I'm choosing to do.
What do you see companies doing poorly about how they engage in communications overall, where you say, wow, that was a mistake?
Yeah, it's a blessing and a curse to be a big organization with multiple functional areas. It's a blessing because to have that robust infrastructure allows a lot of thoughtful experts to think about what's next for a product or an asset and how to plan for it. The curse, of course, is that the bigger you get, potentially the more siloed you get. And so the impact on communications is that that can result in a more fragmented set of communications to the marketplace. And consistency in a brand's presence and promotion and education and language is the force multiplier, right? A consistent message is so much more powerful than a fragmented or diffused one. And so oftentimes, as partners, as agency partners, we'll often work to be connective tissue across some of those fragmented silos. So I see organizations all the time now really working to overcome that, or if it's an emerging or a smaller pharma organization, to build differently so that they eliminate those silos completely. And I think, you know, we as partners are poised well to help our clients be that connective tissue and to think holistically across different facets of communication rather than as separate and distinct areas of expertise. They're not. They're all connected.
So I'm going to ask you one question. It's going to be an unfair question.
Okay.
How do you see the future really changing? Like, where will communications go? Give me 10 years out.
10 years out, I think actually that the premise that I just spoke about has come to fruition in a more physical way. I think our clients will have evolved to a place where they have the ability to be less siloed in their planning and in their execution of communication strategies and tactics. I think also on our side of the equation, on the agency side of the equation, we will have done the same. We will have evolved to have more broad-based, connected perspectives that are more thoughtful in their planning and deployment, so that we expect them to connect out in the marketplace too, right? When you're connected inside and you're your planning and strategy, you see that connectivity go all the way out to the marketplace and to your audiences. When you don't, you see it break down and be fragmented. And so in addition to all of the wonderful technological innovation that I'm sure others on your podcast have talked about, the world is changing. And yes, will AI impact it? Yes. Will data dynamics impact it? Yes, 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 yes. All of that. But I think you have to change some of the fundamental planning skills as well so that you take advantage of that technological influence that we know is there.
Amy Hutnick, you have to come back on the show.
I would love to come back on the show. It's so fun in here.
Oh, thank you so much for being on the Syneos Health Podcast.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's all for today's episode of the Syneos Health Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher. If you have comments, suggestions, questions, or if you just want to talk through a particular challenge that you're having at your life sciences company, you may email me at podcast@syneoshealth.com. We're consultants. That's what we do.